Hey folks, it's an edition of the Shay Anything Podcast, a pre-Thanksgiving edition. Doug Williams alongside Andy Martino. Please subscribe, rate, and review if you haven't already. We'd love to hear from you. And don't forget, SNY will be partnering with the Queens Baseball Convention for its sixth annual gathering of Mets fans at Catch in Astoria. Shay Anything will be doing a live podcast on location at the QBC on January 19th. Tickets go on sale this Friday, November 23rd, so Black Friday, 10 a.m. For more information, follow SNY on social media. We'll provide you with the latest details. There will be panels, Keith Hernandez, Edgardo Alfonso, Ed Cranepool, and Doug Williams, and Andy Martino.
You buried the lead. Obviously, yeah, the last one is the most exciting.
Wow. Andy, how you doing?
Bad.
Why?
My Twitter doesn't work today.
Yeah. Maybe, honestly, can I conspiracy theorize here for a second?
Yeah.
Someone tried to, obviously, like get into your Twitter, and Twitter's all over it.
Twitter locked up my account, and I can't get into it.
Right. Do you think Twitter is just trying to, like, do you a favor and give you the holidays?
Give me the holiday off?
No. Give me the holidays off.
It's not a favor, because that's how I make sure I'm not missing anything, in addition to being able to disseminate news. And we had some news this morning about the Mets and the Indians, and I couldn't tweet about it, and it's sort of what we do in this business. So, while I appreciate Twitter's vigilance, I need my account back.
Did SNY tweet out your, because you wrote a small column.
They did.
Not the same.
It's not the same.
So let's talk about that news. The news that you would have tweeted out this morning was that the Mets and Indians have talked about Yan Gomes. What I find even more interesting is what you also wrote about, which is the potential connection for an outfielder.
Mm-hmm. You know what else is interesting? Did you know that Rolling Stone magazine founder Yan Winner and former MLB outfielder Johnny Gomes had a baby, and they named it Yan Gomes. And he grew up to be a major league catcher.
Can you just go back to my initial
did you know that?
Questioning? I didn't.
So anyway, this guy, this baby that they had, they named after themselves, is on the Indians. He's 31 years old. He's under control for three more seasons. Two of those seasons are options. And the Mets are talking about trading for him because they need a catcher. That's the news. They're talking to the Indians, and I feel like there's a decent chance this could happen. There's a lot of interest in Gomes. The Dodgers are talking to the Indians about Gomes, per Ken Rosenthal. But the Mets are in talks and feeling okay about it at the moment for Yan Gomes.
But what makes him intriguing is that he is an elite defensive catcher.
Okay.
And
he had 16 home runs last year, too.
A solid offensive year last year.
Supposed to be a good pitch framer and all that.
But so, you're not taking the bait. Are you?
You want me to talk about pitching?
Are you grumpy this morning?
Yes, I told you. I was honest.
Twitter has you legitimately grumpy?
Well, yeah, and something. I'm on antibiotics, and I make my stomach hurt.
Oh, right. I forgot about that situation.
Okay. Anyway, let's get into it.
Let's not even get there yet. Met fans are fired up about the idea of the Indians wanting Brandon Nimmo in return.
Oh, so I'm not saying that the Indians want Brandon Nimmo, but I'm sure they do. Because what I do know, what I'm told is, see how I'm perking it up
now? There you go.
The Indians are in search of young outfielders. That they're talking to the Dodgers about outfielders at all. I've heard Puig's name mentioned in a potential Yan Gomes deal with the Indians pitching. The Indians pitching is available. There's a lot of moving parts here, so how can we break this down?
See, this is what I wanted to get to. You were like, yeah, the Mets are interested in Yan Gomes. That's pretty much all there is to the story.
And then I didn't say that.
It's like you got a shot of adrenaline, and now you're actually realizing.
You reminded me that I had a duty.
You're realizing that your own news is actually interesting.
It's exciting.
So continue.
This is interesting, because Brody Van Wagenen, he's going to start doing stuff soon. He's been very, very active. I talked to agents that are like, whoa, Brody's really aggressive. He's calling me a lot, da-da-da. So something is going to drop at some point relatively soon, I think. And there's a really good chance that something is Noah Syndergaard is traded to another team. But if Noah Syndergaard is traded to another team, the Mets plan on replacing him in the rotation. This is where Cleveland becomes a part of what could be this big puzzle here. So let's say you take Brandon Nimmo and a couple of other players, whether it's a Dom Smith, whether it's a prospect or two, like legit players, and trade them for Yan Gomes and Carlos Carrasco or Trevor Bauer. I don't think they probably have what it takes the stomach to get a Kluber. But an Indians pitcher and Yan Gomes, and now you have, say, Carlos Carrasco, and you can trade Noah Syndergaard to San Diego for two or three pieces, and voila, you've achieved a different look for your team. Maybe you don't trade Nimmo. Maybe you trade Conforto and something like that. I'm not saying, I want to be clear that, okay, what is fact is that the Mets are talking about Yan Gomes with the Indians, trade talks. What is a speculative leap on my part is the rest of this stuff.
They'd parlay it with this, yeah. And like they'd get their...
But yeah, it's exactly, but it's speculation rooted in understanding like what's going on and reporting and all that kind of stuff.
I'm so curious as to how Mets fans feel about that, because my sense since you first really broke the story that the Mets were considering mm-hmm. that trade partner of San Diego, like they were mid-season last year, it's as if Met fans hate the idea, no matter what you get back, of trading Noah Syndergaard. And while I understand it, mostly because of how good a starting pitcher he can be and how good your starting pitching is, what you're describing is, I think, what Met fans wanted their new GM to do.
Right.
Which was change up the formula while in win-now mode that mm-hmm. hasn't been working.
Yeah, right. You're telling me that if you got Yan Gomes, Carlos Carrasco, and two Padres close to major league ready prospects, you're not better? Of course you're better.
You are better.
Syndergaard is a really, really, really good pitcher, but if you look at his actual production over the past 2 years, based, of course, on health, which could straighten itself out and he could win two Cy Youngs as a Padre, but the way his production has not matched his talent in the last couple years, so you'd probably rather have 200 innings at a 4 ERA than 100-some innings at a Syndergaard with elite stuff, you know?
And even if they don't get Carrasco in a trade, you've reported that they may be interested in some of the free agent names.
Right, exactly. So that's the point, is that they're looking for ways, they are currently looking for ways to replace Noah Syndergaard in their rotation next year. So that's why we're talking about the Indian starters. That's why they have been in touch with the agents for Patrick Corbin, Jay Happ, Dallas Keuchel, you name them. All these guys that the Yankees have been linked to, the Mets are linked to as well.
Don't you think it would make sense for the Mets to sign like a Jay Happ and maybe a Joe Kelly for the bullpen and
yes.
learn from last year, which was that if you can get by with five innings from your starting pitcher, build the bullpen, try and get better in other places. Look, I dig everything you're saying. Mm-hmm. Like just from trying to put myself in the fan standpoint, I think Brody, first of all, can we talk about what it would take for a guy like Brody to make these moves? Because that is...
What do you mean? Like what kind of...
The stones that it would
take.
I'm putting myself in his shoes. Not only having your first offseason in the job, but to then trading Noah Syndergaard before you even play a game is going to end up reflecting on you and your ability to do the job.
He has got the stones. And I think that's why I expect something dramatic to happen. Because I think that Brody is... intent on showing that he's coming in there without fear. He's not going to be a GM who's afraid of getting burned by a trade. He's a GM who's going to be like, great, Syndergaard, go win two Cy Youngs in San Diego. I would be happy for you, but I'm happy for the Mets too. Like he's someone who's going to believe in what he does enough to take a risk. I just believe that's his personality from knowing him a bit.
Was Syndergaard a Brody client?
He's a CAA client. He did not deal directly.
He had a couple agents?
He's in the CAA family, but Brody was not his principal.
Okay. So, I don't know.
We
talked about that ad nauseum with DeGrom,
yeah.
Especially because there's more of a direct contract negotiation, apparently.
Yeah.
Or
they're keeping DeGrom.
So... the fact that, you know, Noah Syndergaard is clearly very well known to CAA and the company that Brody used to work for, and that they're considering now trading him. John Heyman, before we came on the podcast, saying, I think he believed, what did he say, half a dozen teams are in the Noah Syndergaard sweepstakes now. So that's a lot.
Well, of course, I mean, naturally, once it's public that he's available, that there's going to be a lot of interest there. To your point about CAA, that is actually the fact that a former CAA agent and the Mets both are interested in trading him has made some rival GMs be like, what do they all know about this guy?
Right.
And that's not entirely fair, but that's actually had some effect on some teams who might be interested. I've spoken to GMs that are like, well, why do they want to get rid of him? They know him from an agent standpoint. They know him from a team standpoint. What do they know that I don't? That's... speculative on their part.
Well, I know it's speculative, but to know how well one side knows this guy. Like the depth of knowledge, to your point.
There's only one party that knows you, a player, more than its team, and that's his agency.
And if the agency, in some weird way, and the team are converging and have come up with the idea that, hey, maybe we should explore the idea of getting rid of this guy.
Now,
I can understand the trepidation that might
now,
cause.
Now, if Brody Van Wagenen heard this bit of the conversation, I guarantee you he would push strongly back on it and say, Noah is a good kid, a great pitcher. We just see this as a way that we can get better. So, you know, Brody, if you're out there.
I was going to say,
it would be
great
if counterpoint would be.
This show isn't even live, but I was going to be like, oh, we now have Brody on the line. He's calling in. So what would you, I know you're not going to like this question.
Uh-oh.
What percentage would you put it at that Syndergaard gets dealt this offseason?
I don't want this to be like, oh, Andy Martino says blah, blah, blah percent. But I don't know. So I haven't given this any thought until you just asked me. 60% chance he gets traded. More than half.
Wow. And
but not far from a sure thing.
Looking back on what John Rico said when he was part of the three-headed monster, but not technically the main guy, but was the only guy we heard with the media.
Mm-hmm.
He said, we're going to think outside the box. They then decided to stand pat at the trade deadline, and they didn't do anything technically outside the box until this offseason. Brody now, it sounds like, wants to think outside the box. Is there a structure within the Mets organization? Is there some voice, whether it's John Rico, Omar Minaya, ownership, that is saying, yeah, Brody, go do that. That's what we've wanted to do all along. Or is it Brody coming in saying, I want to think outside the box?
That's a good question. I mean, I think the fact that he got the job by expressing, I guarantee you that he expressed something pretty similar in his interview to what he expressed publicly, because that's clearly very much what's on his mind, is how he wants to be that way and be aggressive and show no fear and do things to win and all that stuff. So I bet you it's something that they feel that, and they're also in a honeymoon phase with a new GM where they probably feel like they're on the same page more than you might a couple years down the road when everyone gets a little sick of each other. But right now I bet they're excited and they're all kind of rowing in the same direction, as is natural for the beginning of a regime. It would have been that if there were 4 or 5 years where you'd say that about Alderson, and then maybe not so much toward the end.
And here's what I'm curious about. So let's say 60%, the Mets do end up trading Noah Syndergaard. They get another starting pitcher like a Carlos Carrasco back, and they end up wheeling and dealing like that. What I want to know and what I would like to ask Brody is that a vote of confidence for Zach Wheeler? Or is that a sign that Jacob deGrom will be here long term? Or do they not even care beyond the end of the 2019 season what their rotation will look like? We're so worried about what the rotation will be. Who's locked up? Like, what's the future? Because to be honest, that's been what we've looked forward to for this Mets team for so long.
Good question. Wheeler, I think Wheeler's gone after this year.
You don't think there's any chance?
There's a chance that they extend him. But I think if I had to bet, he's gone. So it's a good question. They trade Syndergaard. That's a couple of holes now, including Harvey, who's already gone. So this whole thing is not what it was. But maybe that's okay. Maybe they have a different way that they want to go about it. They're trying to win next year, so I think they're going to roll with Wheeler. I don't see a Wheeler extension happening. I think that's going to. I think he'll become a free agent. I will say I haven't really pursued that because there's been so many other things going on. Like, is a line of questions?
Yeah, no, it's interesting because for so many. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, for so many years, Mets fans have been like, "What will the rotation look like once we get Mats and Wheeler and DeGrom and Syndergaard healthy?" And now, we're not, like, the future is kind of now.
For sure.
Like, Wheeler's done after 1 year. We're talking about trading Noah Syndergaard. DeGrom has 2 years left unless he's extended. And so let's move from Wheeler quickly to DeGrom in the same conversation, same vein. Do you think that trading Noah Syndergaard means that Brody Van Wagenen will be thinking about his rotation in 2021, thinking I'd like that to include Jacob deGrom?
I would be shocked if Jacob deGrom didn't have a 5-6 year contract extension by spring training at the very latest.
Okay. So why do you think the Mets think that's good business?
Because he's just so good, really. And he's so their guy. And by the way, David Wright just left, who is like this easy to root for, very popular kind of face of the franchise type player. And even though DeGrom's not an everyday player, he kind of inherits that mantle. He's a lead by example kind of guy. The way he competes is the look that you want for your team to have. So he's just too good to not keep. And I think that's how they see it.
And he's also, our colleague John Harper points this out all the time, so athletic and almost at his age, mm-hmm. doesn't have that tread on the tires, which is why, by the way, he's still in arbitration.
Yeah.
That
30 years old.
You
yeah.
feel like he could pitch like this for a long time. You don't feel like this is that really risky extension. But what if there's a voice? What if there's a voice in the Mets clubhouse, by the way, reasonable take, that says, why would we do this? Other than the romantic view, which is what you just gave,
right?
Which is what I feel like front offices sometimes lack. So if a voice in the Mets front office says, why would we go out of our way?
When we don't have to.
When we don't have to pay Jacob DeGrom $25, $30 million a year in 4 years when we have him for the next 2 years, and then we can see what happens because we don't even know our own direction.
I think that would be you could make a rational argument, but it's just, it's not the way it's going. They've decided he's their guy.
I'm interested to know which side, I don't know, what state of mind dominates the Mets front office right now. Is it the Andy Martino, his reporting dictates that the Mets are like, this is our guy. We need a new face of the franchise, not a captain per se, but basically that. Mm-hmm. Or the view of like, we've got this guy. Like, this is, we're getting lucky here with 2 years. Let's see what happens and then make a decision then. But also there's the idea that if this conversation continues and they don't get to an extension by spring training, you wonder where that relationship will be with Brody and
Jacob. Look, it could always fall apart. I know I just said very strongly that I'd like be shocked but they haven't started negotiating yet. Maybe it won't. Now, I believe that the general manager of the Mets has a pretty good idea of what DeGrom's ask is going to be.
I know we've talked about this on this show.
Yeah, so I mean, you know,
like Brody and Jacob are at a coffee shop or grabbing drinks 18 months ago, and DeGrom's like, sorry, we just dropped something in the studio.
It was a cord.
That doesn't affect
you. Can you guys still hear me? That was the microphone cord.
It works. They're at a coffee shop and say, I think if we approach the Mets and ask for 160, they'll counter with 148. And
I'm sure that's conversations
okay
happened. Not those numbers, but to your point. Yeah.
And this idea that Brody will not be in the room. I know we keep saying it, but he's going to be very involved.
He will be in the room in spirit, is
right?
What you're saying?
Yeah, he'll be in an invisibility cloak.
He's
for any Harry Potter fans out there.
Yes.
By the way, we haven't done a show since Jacob won the Cy Young Award.
Really?
Which is pretty cool.
Right.
Andy was
I had kidney stones. I'm not going to beat around the bush.
Yeah, Andy.
It was terrible.
That's rough.
Anyway,
are you feeling a little bit better?
I'm getting there.
Yikes. Well, glad to hear you're better. We're glad to have you back.
That's why I missed DeGrom Day.
Yeah, last week Andy was supposed to be on the show, and he won the Cy Young Award. And so before I went on the air, I was changing into my suit in the dressing room, and I was leaving, and John Hine came in, co-host of Loud Mouse, and has been on this podcast.
He has.
And he said to me, I think Scherzer's got a shot. And I was like, I don't think so. Like, I think DeGrom's going to win it. But I left that conversation thinking, you know what? I mean, would I be shocked? Mm-hmm. Well, yes.
I thought it would be closer.
I thought it would be closer. So then DeGrom wins 29-1. The one Max Scherzer first place vote was this writer from San Diego.
John Maffey.
Gets eviscerated by Twitter for no reason. And I want to give you my point of view and then get your take on it because I haven't seen you in a while. You weren't here last week when we were talking about this. Let's say you were underneath a rock last year and during the baseball season, and you somehow, while you were underneath the rock, you did qualify for a Cy Young vote. So you just pull up a piece of paper or pull up Baseball Reference and you're putting all these resumes next to each other. Throw Aaron Nola out. You're looking at Scherzer versus DeGrom and you're like, wow. Lots of innings for Scherzer, lots of strikeouts. The wins, screw it. That sounds fine. That's a Cy Young resume. I'll give it to him. I would not blame you for that. it's almost like, and believe me, I would have voted for DeGrom. I think he deserves to win the award.
But Scherzer is not a ridiculous vote.
Exactly. I don't understand how you can look at Scherzer and think it's an absurd evaluation that he's a Cy Young caliber pitcher, and 2018 especially, like, it is not that crazy. He got one vote. It wouldn't have been crazy if he got 10.
I know. Look, it was disgusting what happened to this guy. Steve Summers, who I've been on with a million times, and I enjoy his shtick, actually, but he did a terrible job. He ambushed this guy, Maffei, or whatever his name is, however you say it. He said, like, we want your 15 minutes of fame. I know a lot of you out there that aren't on Twitter or that aren't mean on Twitter don't fall into this, but there were Met fans on Twitter who were going after the guy or sending him emails. It's like, first of all, you're right. It was not a ridiculous vote. I would have voted for DeGrom, too, if I believed that such awards should exist or should be voted for. DeGrom had a better year, but Scherzer had a great year, and he was a reasonable vote. And this guy getting this kind of abuse, to me, was just an argument against a lot of things that form a lot of our lives, like awards, like Twitter. I'm on a soapbox. Social media used to be fun, and now, like, there's just a reflexive toxicity around these discussions about these kinds of things, where an award or Hall of Fame vote becomes a negative point toward candidates and voters.
That's exactly.
When it's not a celebration of excellence anymore. Like, people are like, oh, well, screw Max Scherzer. It's like, no, like, he's amazing. DeGrom's amazing. Why do we have to, like, be negative about any of them?
Totally agree. It's exactly what I was going to say. And it makes me sad, honestly. And I know that this is a podcast for Mets fans. And I hope that all of you listening reacted rationally to the fact that he didn't get unanimous. But it makes me wonder, like, what do you not get out of DeGrom getting 29?
That's the thing, too. Like, talk about finding something to be mad about. Your guy won in a blowout.
He won in a landslide. Like, a landslide decision. And for some reason, you know, people have to get angry at this one guy. I mean, look at Max Scherzer's season. Is it that crazy? And here's another way to look at it. If you are angry at Maffei, did you expect going into the award that it would be unanimous?
That's a good point.
If you did, then sure, you can disagree with him. If you did not, you can't get mad at the one guy, because you have to imagine that there's not any collusion between the writers, right?
No collusion.
No collusion. There's no, if you're one of the 30 votes and you don't talk to the other writers, you may get left out on an island.
Yeah, he didn't know he was going to be.
He didn't know he was going to be the only one.
You don't even know who the voters are, who your other voters are.
You don't know. You're not trying to. The idea that he would get 15 minutes of fame is so crazy, because he's not like, oh, yeah, I've spoken to all other 29. I'm going to make a name for myself.
It was a really bad job by Steve Summers there. Really nasty. And to be clear, I'm not coming from a place of defending my fellow BBWA. I don't believe, as you know, Doug, I don't believe that the BBWA should be able to vote for these awards. I don't agree with it. I have declined MVP, Cy Young, all. I've never voted. Like, I've had the chance year in, year out. I've never voted for anything. And this year I turned down my Hall of Fame vote for the first time because I was qualified. So I'm not defending the writers. I don't think we should be voting. But I think very much so that people shouldn't be harassing, especially as all the points you made, nothing bad. I might get Met fans being mad if DeGrom lost.
Yeah.
Anyway, whatever. So we know it's not you guys. It's not you listeners. It's the other ones that aren't listening.
Let's talk, though, about how great Jacob DeGrom was. And I don't know if you saw any of his interview with Steve Gelbs in any of our show, but what I took away from it was, and Steve asked him about this, and something that I think is unique to Jacob DeGrom and really, really cool, was Jacob crediting people like Johan Santana and John Smoltz, who John Smoltz, by the way, called Jacob DeGrom being this great, capable of being this great for a long time.
First thing John Smoltz has been happy and positive about in years.
He's more positive than that. He gets this reputation as being a curmudgeon in the booth, which he can sometimes be.
He's a grumpy fellow, man.
Anyway, DeGrom has been good since he got into the big leagues, like very good.
Yeah.
And he has been on this quest to listen, like to get better, to learn from people. And, you know, I almost think about sometimes when Dave Eiland got hired and Dan Worthen, who was so adored, as you know, by the Mets pitching staff when he left, DeGrom credits Dave Island directly with this thing that, and Nelson Figueroa would be able to tell you the numbers better than I, but DeGrom threw inside, especially the left-handed hitters, more this year than he ever had before. He goes directly to Dave Island for the credit for that. Like, what I find interesting about DeGrom is, obviously, all great athletes have to be self-obsessed, but he is constantly trying to crowdsource information to get him better.
Yeah.
And to have Dave Island come in, new voice, new pitching coach, I think a lot of guys who are already great would say, like, what do you know? Like, I'm already great. What are you going to do and come in and change me? And that is the opposite of the way Jacob DeGrom's mindset works.
Yeah, for sure. And I talked to him once last year in the midst of his great streak about why that was going on. He said he specifically has changed his approach with runners on base, and that's been a huge thing. And one thing he did this year that he'd never done before was to basically throw every pitch like a two-strike pitch once the runner was in scoring position. And so, therefore, change pitch selection and total approach. And so a situation like that, where he's pretty deep into his career, completely revamped the way he pitches in a certain situation. And that, so he's always evolving.
Do you think his great season changed the course of the Mets season, even if it didn't end up resulting in an over 500 year? There's technically nothing great came out of the 2018 season, a terrible July. Mm-hmm. But do you think the fact that he was so insanely good added to a little optimism when it mattered most in July, late July, trade deadline, that led to the Mets thinking, we've got something now to build on? And that goes
him and Wheeler and Conforto and Nimmo probably, because especially honestly Wheeler, who might have been a little bit better in the second half than DeGrom.
True.
Yeah, and so they won more games and were able to finish the season with a better feeling. Yeah, and I think that all contributed. DeGrom was obviously a huge part of
it. But it's almost not even about just winning games, better feeling warm and fuzzy at the end of the year, because you are under 500. You underachieved. You had a struggling first-year manager. You had a GM who had left. Like, there were still a ton of question marks. But it was almost like the foundation of the Mets showed itself at a really vital time that it could eventually lead to a winning philosophy. Like, and I think that's dramatically important, because we sat here for weeks disagreeing about the direction, the future direction of the Mets franchise, what they should do. And they went Andy's route. They stood fairly pat at the deadlines. Dribble Cabrera, Jay Reese Familia left. But they, without Jacob DeGrom, in my opinion, would have had a harder time selling, not selling, to their fan base.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Sure.
So anyway, there's a ton to discuss with the pitching staff right now, especially considering Noah Syndergaard may be on his way out. We talked about Wheeler. We talked about DeGrom. But here we are, Andy.
Here we are.
About to be Thanksgiving.
And instead,
no Twitter, which will be nice. You'll be able to be totally present, even when the Mets trade Noah Syndergaard.
I won't know.
Tomorrow afternoon, you'll have no idea. You'll have no
way. Or even worse, someone will tell me, and I won't be able to tell
you'll
the world.
You'll get the piece of news before Ken Rosenthal or Joel Sherman or John Heyman, and you won't be able to tweet it out. That's like, you're going to have nightmares tonight. Wake up howling in your sleep.
It's a terrible thing.
What are your Thanksgiving plans?
I'm going to be at my in-law's house in Manhattan, New York. And it'll be fun. I'm going to spend probably a couple days in the city, hanging out with the family, do different city-type activities. It'll be fun.
Interesting. You don't normally talk about exact locations, so you're okay with the paparazzi surrounding the island of Manhattan because you're going to be there?
I think that gives me enough leeway that if TMZ wants to get my train info or something in terms of arrival, like, go for it.
I'm going to Connecticut, my usual boring stuff, family. Actually, I'm making mashed potatoes again this year. I made them last year. They were a huge hit. So
I'm the mashed potato guy.
Are you?
That's always my job. Don't you take pride in, like, really getting all the lumps out, like really working it?
Yeah, last year I was just, I sat back at the dinner and I was just watching people like mix the potatoes in with the stuffing and the turkey. I was like, I did it.
Do you agree that the key really to good mashed potatoes is simply way more butter than anyone would ever imagine?
Oh my God.
You just
God,
keep
you put
it
a
in.
Ton of butter in.
Yeah, until like, it like tastes buttery and then you've
and,
got it.
And garlic and milk and all these things that taste great, you go so far from the potatoes. Like, it strays so far from the original ingredients.
Stick after stick of butter.
It's just so good. Oh, it's great.
I enjoy that job.
Can't wait. Well, listen, everybody out there, I hope you have a very happy Thanksgiving. We'll be back. We have a couple weeks before the winter meetings. You will be attending, sorry, the GM meetings.
No, you got to read the
winter
first
meetings.
The winter meetings, which I will be attending, along with a large SNY crew, Steve Gelbs, who else? Who else is on camera?
Mark Flamini.
Well, Mark Flamini, Matt Dunn, Christian.
Jim Duquette.
Say goodbye. Jim Duquette will be there.
You did a really good job selling our programming at the winter meetings.
It'll be good. It always is good. I don't have to sell it. It sells itself.
And I'll be here in the studio early all week in case news breaks. I'm great in the morning, so that's good news for everybody. That'll be good content.
He drinks until like 4.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Yeah, this whole boring thing is just a shtick. I'm just out at the club.
You can't know what he's really doing.
Thanks for subscribing, listening, rating, reviewing. We appreciate it. Have a happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Bye.